I'd like to turn to the 85th Psalm, Psalm 85. This particular psalm was probably written after the return of the exiles from Babylonian captivity. We base that upon verse 1. Lord, thou hast been favorable unto thy land. Thou hast brought back the captivity of Jacob. So this would make it a post-exilic psalm. The Babylonian captivity, of course, was God's judgment upon Israel for their sins. And after regime change, the Persian king Cyrus had allowed a remnant to return to Jerusalem. And the psalmist begins here in verses 1 through 3 by recognizing the blessings of God bestowed upon his people, how that the Lord in his grace and mercy had intervened in their lives and rescued them from the captivity. But when they returned home to Jerusalem, they of course found the city in ruins. The temple was in ruins. Their neighbors were all hostile. And though they were back home, they were not where they needed to be with the Lord. And the psalmist brings that out in verses 4 through 7. And we've preached on those verses many times, particularly verse 6, wilt thou not revive us again? So in verses 4 through 7, there's a plea for spiritual restoration. There's a plea for a spiritual reviving or for new spiritual life. And then in verses 8 and 9, there's an expression of confidence that the Lord would grant such. And that brings us to our text, verse 10. Mercy and truth are met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. It's at the Labor Day conference down in Frankfort, Kentucky. A preacher friend of mine who him and I discuss scriptures when we can, he came up to me and he said, have you ever preached on Psalm 85:10? And I turned to it and I said, no, I can't say that I have. I preached in Psalm 85 many times. He said, well, Brother Dan, there's something there. And I said, well, that's true of all the Bible. He said, no, I mean, there's something really there. Study that and tell me what you come up with. Well, I haven't talked to him since, but we have looked at it. And the meaning and the imagery of these verses, of this verse, very picturesque, very rich in meaning. And we want to take the thought of the message from what we read here in verse 10. I believe what we see here embedded in these words, mercy and truth are met together, righteousness and peace have kissed each other. In those words is a beautiful picture of what Jesus Christ has done for us. It's part of the assurance that the psalmist has in this psalm. Embedded in these words is a beautiful picture of salvation in Jesus Christ. Now here in verse 10, we see there are four virtues. Mercy, truth, righteousness, and peace. These are divine virtues, perfections in God. They are perfections in God displayed in salvation. And here in verse 10, there is the image of these four virtues of God coming together. Mercy and truth are met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed one another. There's the image of these four coming together. And the image of these four coming together reveal the wisdom of God's plan of salvation and reveals the only hope that man has today. And again, it's what we read here in verse 10 is what gave the psalmist hope and assurance that God would revive them again. And it is these four virtues of God coming together that give us hope and give us assurance. So I want to speak this morning on divine virtues united in Christ. We want to see these four virtues individually, and then we want to see them as they come together. Four virtues: mercy, truth, righteousness, and peace. And in verse 10, they are personified because they meet and they kiss. So these four virtues are presented to us personified. We need to view these in light of man, in light of God. First of all, look at man. He has sinned against God. It is declared in Romans 3:23, for all have sinned. Sin is the very violation of the laws of God, and all have sinned. All have violated the law of God. Sin is a crime against God. Sin is an opposition to God. It is an uprising. It is a rebellion. It is a revolt against God. It is a striving and contending against God. It is a defiance of God. And all have sinned. All sin is treason against God. It's treason against His authority, His goodness, His love, His long-suffering, His wisdom, and all have sinned. Sin has the nature, the features, and the behavior of Satan, and all have sinned. There's nothing as wrong as sin. Nothing. There's nothing as perverted as sin. There's nothing as monstrous and horrific as sin. There's nothing more detestable and despicable than sin. There's nothing more vile, corrupt, and shameful. Nothing more deceitful. Nothing more fraudulent as sin. And all have sinned. Sin in the Bible is referred to as filthiness. And it is likened to, in the Scriptures, a menstruous cloth. It is likened to mire and dung and rottenness and the stench of the grave and to the vomit of dogs. And look at man. Look at him. covered in the filth of sin. A sinner by birth, a sinner by nature, a sinner by choice, and a sinner by practice. That's man. So there he is. He's sinful. He's guilty. It's declared in Romans 3, verses 10 through 12, concerning man as a sinner. There is none righteous, no, not one. There is none that understandeth, there is none that seeketh after God. They are all gone out of the way. They are together within themselves. You put them all together and they're unprofitable. There is none that doeth good. No, not one. So there is the sinner. He is void of all righteousness. Now enter God. He's holy. He's perfectly righteous. He's pure. There is no flaw. There is no defect. He's free from all imperfection. He is faultless. He is perfectly good. And this holy, righteous, pure God hates sin. And he hates it intensely. He hates it with a perfect hatred. We read in Habakkuk 1, verse 13, concerning God, thou art of purer eyes than to behold evil, and canst not look on iniquity. This holy, righteous, pure, and faultless God has also established a law. And it is declared in James 2, verse 10, for whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he's guilty of all. Guilty of all. And again, I remind you, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. So there is sinful man, guilty before a sinless God. This God has a law. And this God is not a God who will pass by transgression. He is not a God that can be pacified with a few good words and works. There's many who think that way. Holy God and sinful man. Which raises the question that Job asked in Job 9, verse 2. How should man be just with God? And that Bildad asked in Job 25:4, how then can man be justified with God? You have God, you have man. How can these two, complete opposites, how can these two ever be reconciled? How can the sinner find acceptance with an all-holy God? How can this God, who is holy and righteous, ever be pacified? These are questions which man in his warped, sinful reasoning has come up with many so-called answers and remedies. But every single remedy of man is false. and it's faulty, and it's doomed to failure. Every single remedy of man is based upon a faulty perception of both the character of God and man. They do not see God as who He is, holy. And they do not see man as who he is. So there is sinful and guilty man. And there is holy, impeccable God. And in relation to man and God, we read of these four attributes or four virtues of God. Mercy, truth, righteousness, and peace. And we want to view these four in their personification. First of all, there is truth. This is God's faithfulness to Himself. This is God's faithfulness to His promises, to His threatenings. It is declared in Numbers 23 and 19 that God is not a man that He should lie, neither the Son of Man that He should repent. Hath He said, and shall He not do it? Or hath He spoken, and shall He not make it good? With that in mind, Ezekiel 18, verse 4 and 20, God declared, "The soul that sinneth shall die." God cannot lie. God cannot deny that truth. The soul that sinneth shall die. Truth says there's none righteous. No, not one. Truth says there is none that seeketh after God. Truth says there is none that understandeth. They are all gone out of the way. Truth says, man has fallen short of God's glory. The truth of God says man does not measure up to God. Truth says man can never measure up to God. Truth says that man is filthy before God. Truth says that man has broken and transgressed the very law of God. Truth says that man is in violation of God's law. He's gone aside from what is prescribed in God's law. Truth says that this man, he's in rebellion against God. And he's guilty before God. And he's unworthy of any favor from God. That's what truth says. There is righteousness. This is God's justice. It speaks of the fact that God always acts in conformity to what is right. Always. God declares what is right in His law. And man has broken that law. Man has violated God's law. He has rebelled against it. So righteousness comes and looks at the sinner and says, except you have the perfect righteousness of God, you cannot go to heaven. That's what righteousness says. Except you be as holy as God, you can in no way enter in heaven. Righteousness says, you as a sinner are legally responsible before God. You are indebted to God. And you are under the just condemnation of God. Righteousness says, justice, sin must be punished. Sin must be punished. Righteousness cries for execution. Righteousness cries for punishment. So righteousness looks at sinful man and cries out, execution! He must die. He's rebelled against God. So you take truth and righteousness, and that leaves us out. Every one of us. For all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Truth and righteousness blocks our way to God. You can't get past. I don't care how religious you are. You cannot get past the truth and righteousness or justice of God. Can't get past it. There's also mercy. This is love that stoops and overlooks what the sinner deserves. Mercy also cries out. Mercy pleads for the filthy, wretched, miserable, bankrupt, guilty sinner. Mercy looks at the sinner and says, I love them. I love them. Mercy looks at the sinner and says, I want to look beyond what they have done. Mercy says, I want to justify them. I want to make them right. Mercy looks at the guilty sinner and says, I prefer not to deal with them based on their merit and what they deserve. Mercy pleads, I know that sinner deserves death. I know they deserve condemnation. I know that they are destitute of all merit. They are unfit. They are unworthy. But I don't want to deal with them on the basis of who they are and what they deserve. And truth and righteousness cry out, they are fallen. They have fallen short of God's requirements. They are guilty. They are legally responsible before God. And they deserve hell. That's truth and righteousness. Mercy pleads for the sinner. And then there's peace. Peace, of course, is reconciliation. Truth and righteousness declare that there is a conflict, there is an enmity between God and man. But peace pleads for reconciliation. Peace says, I want a settlement. I want a resolution. I'm all for pacification and appeasement. Peace says, I know that they have risen up against God as an enemy. And I know they continue to strive and contend against God. And I know that they resist and oppose God and that they have departed from God and forsaken God. And I know that they have an aversion to God and a defiance of God and a disregard for God and that they provoke God. I know all of that. But I want to restore them to favor. I desire a reunion. I desire that God and man be brought together. And truth and righteousness cry again, they are falling short of my glory. They have fallen short of my requirements. They are guilty. They are legally responsible before God, and they are deserving of hell. So you have these four virtues. Now we see them coming, they're brought together. Here in verse 10. Again mentioned are mercy, truth, righteousness, and peace. And here in verse 10, they are paired. We just looked at them individually. But here in verse 10, they are paired. But they are not paired as one would normally think of them being paired. One would think that truth and righteousness would be paired together. And one would think that mercy and peace would be paired together. But that's not how they're paired. It is mercy and truth are met together. And it is righteousness and peace have kissed each other. And it's this pairing that make these words so beautiful, so amazing, so marvelous, so wondrous. Though truth and mercy, or truth and righteousness, appear to be opposed and contrary to mercy and peace, we read these words, mercy and truth, are met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. The truth is, this must be so. You see, for the sinner cannot have mercy from God and peace with God without truth and righteousness being satisfied. Mercy and peace do not come at the expense of truth and righteousness. Never has, never will. Truth and righteousness must be satisfied. They must be appeased. You and I can't do that. There is no mercy or peace for the sinner at the expense of truth or at the expense of righteousness. Someone has written that when God saves a sinner, He overlooks His justice. Oh, no, He doesn't. God doesn't never deny any part of Himself. Truth and righteousness are not overlooked. They're not ignored for the sake of mercy and peace. There is no salvation. There is no hope apart from truth and righteousness being brought together with mercy and peace. Mercy and truth have met together. That's an unexpected meeting. That's an inseparable meeting. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. What a meeting. Mercy and truth, righteousness and peace. Religion cannot bring these together. Man's utmost efforts cannot bring these together. Man's own spirituality cannot bring these together. Yet they have been brought together. Mercy and truth are met together. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. This is the doing of God. So we must ask, when and where did mercy and truth meet? Mercy and truth have met together. They had to meet somewhere. When and where did righteousness and peace embrace? That brings us to Jesus. Jesus Christ, God Himself, left the glory, the majesties and splendor and the praises of heaven, and came to this sin-cursed earth in a body of human flesh, and mercy and truth met together in Jesus Christ. And righteousness and peace kissed each other in Jesus Christ, in the person and work of Jesus Christ. Did not Jesus declare, John 14 and 6, I am the truth. Romans 3:25, we read concerning Jesus Christ, whom God hath set forth to be a propitiation, or a what? A mercy seat. Mercy and truth are met together. And Jesus Christ is truth. And Jesus Christ is the mercy seat. In 2 Corinthians 5:21, we read the righteousness of God in Him. In Jesus Christ. In Isaiah 9 and verse 6, Christ is referred to as the Prince of peace. In Jesus Christ, mercy and truth are met together. In Jesus Christ, righteousness and peace have kissed each other. Jesus Christ is the personification of mercy. He is the personification of truth. He is the personification of righteousness and peace. Truth says, the soul that sinneth shall die. Jesus came, laid down His life, died in the stead of sinners who deserve to die. And He says, the truth meet mercy. Jesus Christ laid down His life. The soul that sinneth must die. And Jesus died in the place of sinners. And He said, meet mercy. Mercy and truth are met together. That is, God can deal with sinners not based upon what they deserve, because truth is satisfied in Jesus Christ. Remember, we said truth and righteousness must be satisfied. You cannot satisfy truth. You can't do it. But truth has to be satisfied if the sinner is going to be saved. Not overlooked, not ignored, but satisfied, appeased. And it is in Jesus Christ. In Jesus Christ, mercy and truth are met together. Righteousness says, except you have the perfect righteousness of God, you cannot go to heaven. And Jesus says, I am the righteousness of God. And I have fulfilled all righteousness for them. Righteousness says, man is legally responsible before God. He's indebted to God. He's under the condemnation of God. And righteousness says sin must be punished. And Jesus says, I've been made sin for them. And I've been punished. I've paid their sin debt in full. and endured the almighty wrath of God in their stead. And he says, the righteousness meet peace. Righteousness has been appeased. Righteousness has been satisfied. Because Jesus Christ was made sin for us, God and the sinner can be brought together in conciliation and harmony. Righteousness is satisfied in Jesus Christ, and in Him, righteousness and peace have kissed each other. The only place that these can meet is in Christ. The only way truth can be satisfied is in Jesus Christ. And truth being satisfied makes room for mercy. The only way righteousness can be satisfied is in Jesus Christ. And that brings peace. So you take the sinner, feeling the weight of their sin pressing down upon them, feeling the guilt of their sin, and feeling their unworthiness. And that sinner asks, where can I find an escape from the claims of truth and righteousness? How do I escape the claims of truth and righteousness? Where can I find mercy? Where can I find peace? Is there any refuge at all from the truth and righteousness of God? And the answer is, mercy and truth have met together in Jesus Christ. And righteousness and peace have kissed each other in Jesus Christ. That is the only way that the truth and righteousness can be appeased and satisfied. There's nothing I could do to appease or to undo the truth, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. There was nothing I could do to undo. The soul that sinneth shall die. I could do nothing. I couldn't get past truth. I couldn't get past righteousness, which said I must have justice. That soul is worthy of hell. What are you going to offer truth and righteousness? Well, here's my baptism. That's not going to satisfy him. Well, I was a member of Home Baptist Church. That doesn't change truth and righteousness. That doesn't appease them. Well, I tried the best I could. You cannot get past truth and righteousness. You need mercy and peace. Oh, you need it. You have to have it. But you cannot have it at the expense of truth and righteousness. So in Jesus Christ, truth is satisfied. And truth and mercy come together. And the only way that the sinner can find mercy is in Jesus Christ. Righteousness must be appeased. Nothing short of the very righteousness of God will get a sinner in heaven. Well, I feel I'm a pretty good person. Well, let's say you are. You're not, but let's say you are. That doesn't get you past the perfect righteousness of God. Because if you've offended, if you've only committed one sin, if you've only broken one law, and you only did it one time, you're guilty of all. You cannot get past the righteousness of God. It's impossible. You need the mercy and you need the peace, but you can't get past this truth and righteousness. But Jesus Christ appeased truth. Jesus Christ appeased righteousness. And because of that, there is mercy and peace in Jesus Christ. But it's nowhere else. It's nowhere else. And so it is, unsaved sinner. You need mercy and peace. You're in desperate need. But truth and righteousness stand in the way. And God's not going to overlook either. They both have to be appeased. And Jesus did that. He did that. Jesus Christ became incarnate. I want to say that truth and mercy met together. Righteousness and peace kissed each other. When Jesus Christ went to Calvary, mercy and truth, or mercy and truth met together, and righteousness and peace kissed each other. And when Jesus Christ came out of that grave, truth and mercy met together, and righteousness and peace kissed each other. Therein lies our hope. Jesus Christ. You have no other hope. See, for all these individuals who say, well, I'm just hoping that my good outweighs my bad. Well, let me tell you something. It's not going to happen. God's not going to overlook His truth or His righteousness for you or for anyone else. But Jesus Christ came and He fulfilled truth and He fulfilled righteousness for me. And now I have mercy and peace. And that's the only way you can have it as well. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.